Welcome to the Katakalam Project on the Katakalam Media. I'm your host, Che Ting Ye. Recently, the headlines of Taiwan newspapers were filled with controversies about changes in the high school curriculum, especially over civic education and history. Education in Taiwan is a big topic, and the most visible battles are fought over the competing nationalistic interpretations of Taiwan's histories. However, perhaps a more silent but endemic problem in Taiwan is the difference between life in the urban centers versus life in the rural outskirts. Again, this difference plays out in the field of education. According to the Child Welfare League Foundation, almost 6 out of 10 rural school children have no access to computers or the internet at home, compared to 9 out of 10 urban kids with 3 or more computers per household. More than 70% of elementary school rural children are not confident they can handle middle school, and 1 out of 4 have doubts about even moving on to middle school. These are not acute controversies that the media likes to report, but they are much harder problems to solve. Yet there is a group of people tackling this situation. Teach for Taiwan is a nonprofit organization founded in 2012 based on the Teach for America model that trains young teachers to teach in remote and difficult areas of the country. Today, we talk to Anting Liu, the founder of Teach for Taiwan, about the organization, education for remote areas, and some ideas on educational direction as a whole. Anting, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
First of all, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how did the Teach for Taiwan idea come about?
Sure. So I'm Anting. I am currently 24 years old. I grew up in Taiwan. I went through the local school system. I learned English at school, so it's a struggle. But then at age 17, I decided, stupidly enough, that I might want to try applying to schools in the States. So I did. And eventually, since I also took the Taiwanese entrance test to colleges, eventually I gave up my eligibility to go into National Taiwan University to try for Princeton. So I was in Princeton for 4 years, and during those 4 years, I wanted to squeeze the money out of Princeton as much as possible. So I got funding to travel the world, and that was sort of my one sole goal for college. So I traveled to Ghana, to Paris, to Geneva, to Haiti, to Cambodia, and in all these places, I somehow always ended up being a teacher or in the education field for the very least. And I just couldn't resist it, even if I hadn't planned for becoming a teacher in these places. And when I graduated from college for the first year or so, I was a management consultant, as many of my friends were. And I just couldn't forget the feeling I got, the sense of fulfillment I had when I was a teacher. And my job as a management consultant paid me so much better, but I just couldn't feel the same sense of fulfillment. And at the same time, I was obviously still in touch with many of my friends, and especially my parents in Taiwan, who were retired from their first careers and had been in education for many years as well. They were telling me the problem of not being able to get good teachers in remote areas and asked me if I had any idea as to whether, for example, the U.S. had the same problem and whether they had a good solution to it. And so all these questions led me to think of Teach for America, which is founded by a Princeton grad about 20 years ago. So I knew their story, and I was sort of in the middle of many people who had done it or who were doing it, and I always admired them. One thing connects to another. I started thinking about this idea when I was a consultant, and then now 2 years later, I'm back with a wonderful team on the ground, and we're about to launch our pilot program in this coming year. So be fantastic to see it all come to fruit. So
for listeners in the States, I mean, a lot of people probably have heard about Teach for America, but I don't think many people know that there is a program that's inspired by that in Taiwan, sort of doing similar sort of things. But when we think about education in Taiwan, I think people, you know, in addition to the regular school system, I think most people come, the image most people have is probably the cram schools, right? You know, after school, private schools, or even sort of alternative bilingual schools. So Teach for Taiwan is obviously not those. So what is Teach for Taiwan doing in Taiwan currently?
Right. So Teach for America, for example, has an international network called Teach for All. And we're in the process of joining the network, even though we're not officially partnered just yet. But the reason why I mention it is because the things that we do in the 30-some countries that are in the network are very similar. It's just the way we do things are different based on our local context. So the way that all these countries do the program is that we recruit for young, capable people, some college graduates or some people who are transitioning from their first jobs. And regardless, we recruit for them and then we train them. And then, oops, that's my dog. anyway, we train them and we pair them up with schools that are in need of more good or more or better teachers. And these schools are chosen with a separate process. So we basically serve in some ways as a bridge. And we bridge young people with schools in need. And that's what we do. That's what Teach for America does. And that's what Teach for, you know, for example, Australia, sure, uh-huh. India, China. Right.
Okay. So. And you mentioned building a bridge for people who may have the passion or interest to teach, and then for sort of bridging that to places that need more and better teachers. So I'm more curious as to how do you build your team, and you know, and right now, how do you find people and how do you train these people to become better teachers?
So the question of how I formed the team, it's quite interesting for me as well, because I didn't think I could ever build a team this way. I was in the States still, and the way I perceived the project at the very beginning was that I knew there are successful business people in Taiwan who are retired, who are now in education, and who might be interested in the project and might be interested in carrying out the project themselves. So originally I thought, you know, I had an entire career in front of me in the States. And so what I would do is I would write a proposal, a very detailed plan, execution plan for these successful retired business people who had wonderful teams to carry out. And in the process of doing that, I, on the one hand, started writing this detailed plan I wanted. On the other hand, I started getting in contact with these people that I wanted to carry out the project. And these people are usually, you know, a generation above me. They're my parents' age, and they're very interested in the project because they are seeing this problem as well as a very urgent one. However, they eventually decided, after understanding Teach for America even more, that this is more than just an organization or a project. Eventually, this has to be some sort of generational social movement, you know, so college graduates choosing not to go to traditionally successful or good jobs and choosing instead to redefine what is good for a first job and redefining what is successful. And this has to be done more than the organization. This has to be done by a generation. And if that's the core of what we're doing, then it obviously needs to be led by somebody in this generation. And so they start convincing me that I should be part of the work. And so once they started convincing me, they said, all right, if you are willing to do this, here's sort of what might ease your transition or decision period. They would help me find three young people who are also in the generation who they know are pretty capable and very interested in the subject. And while I was in the States still, I could remotely work with them to get some prep work done. So that's how they sort of cheat me into the
prep. Sort of like, it's your idea, so why don't you do it? Kind of a...
Right. And right. I realized it wasn't because, obviously it wasn't because I was more capable, because they were so much more capable. But it was because of my status, my identity as part of this generation. There are things that we're supposed to do as a generation, and there are responsibility that comes with being part of this generation. And it's not about capability or, you know, what about where we come
from. Right, uh-huh.
So that's how, over the process of working remotely with the team, eventually I decided to come back to join them physically. So yeah, that's a short story.
Wow, I mean, so right now, you have a, I mean, from what it looks like, a very capable, very, you know, talented and engaged, passionate team. And as for teachers, so for example, if I am a college graduate, college student in Taiwan,
mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in teach for Taiwan, so what, can you describe sort of what that training process might look like?
Sure. So the timeline is something that differs from Teacher America's timeline. In Taiwan, traditionally, students start looking for jobs after Chinese New Year, which just happened. So actually, literally, this week, as we're speaking, we're opening up our applications. The application period would last until April 20th for this year. So about two months. Afterwards, there'll be two extra. So after we review applications, the people who make it to the next round, second round interview will be done over Skype, and the third round interviews will be done in person. And since this is only our pilot program, we'll expand over the years. But this year, we expect it to be extra competitive because we only have 10 and a maximum 15 spots for all our applicants, because you're trying to ensure quality for the very first year. So if you make it to one of our final 10 to 15, the training will happen starting June 30th and 5 weeks after that. So it would end around early August. And then you would go into schools once the new school year starts. So it'd be late August when you would move to your new school and join the community.
I see. I'm just kind of curious as to what kind of responses you guys might have gotten when you sort of pitched this to college students.
Right.
So what kind of responses have people sort of shown?
Well, I think obviously I wasn't there 20 years ago when Teacher America was there for the first year. But after talking to Teach for America for many times and interacting now with Taiwanese students, and in my mind, it's actually not too different. What we're seeing here and what they were seeing 20 years ago, which is that this is a really unconventional job, you know, for a talented, probably proud college graduate to choose not to go into the Taiwanese equivalent of Wall Street or management consulting or whatever that's conventionally good jobs, to choose instead to go into teaching rural areas. So there are many, many questions as to why should I do this? What do I get out of this? Are you sure this is going to work out 2 years later? You know, and why should I trust you? And so those are questions that we expected to get as a very new organization and type of work that we're trying to propose. So over the time, you know, it's been a journey for me and my team where we're seeing in the process of trying to convince them that this is a valuable choice, and this is actually more than value, it's probably your best choice if you think about it, for your first job. We realized that the way that we convince them is not by telling them in detail how wonderful our training is or how ridiculous our amount of resources we're investing in each of teacher. These are all helpful, but eventually we are young people and we're emotional in the sense that once they fully were in agreement with our mission, the rest of the work is really easy. So we spend a lot of time letting them know my personal story of giving up management consulting and joining this work and many other stories that we know of. And these stories give them agreement with the mission and also courage to say that, hey, you know, many people have done this and they're really happy in what they're doing. Maybe I should give it a shot as well. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, like, I remember, you know, back in college, looking at Teach for America and, you know, really felt that, you know, that was something really interesting to do. Anyways, that's besides the point.
Yeah.
so right now we're going to take a quick break. We've been talking with the founder of Teach for Taiwan, Anting Liu, on the Katagalan project. So in the next section, we'll talk a little bit more about the educational landscape in Taiwan in general. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Katagalan Project. This is your host, Chaiting Ye. I'm here talking with Anting Liu, the founder of Teach for Taiwan, about the organization Teach for Taiwan, but also a little bit about our thoughts on the educational landscape in Taiwan. So just to sort of focus more on Teach for Taiwan for a little longer, what are some of your vision and plans for the longer term? Sort of what challenges do you see Teach for Taiwan facing in the upcoming year?
Well, we can talk about challenges for 3, 4 hours. well, to choose a few that I think are quote unquote biggest, the first is that we're working with a very, very, I can't emphasize enough, very complex system in Taiwan. It's probably the most complex system, which is the education system in Taiwan. So there are many, many things to work with, even with our project of it sounds simple, you know, we're sending young good teachers into schools in need, but there are just so many either regulations or traditions or people to see in order for this to be sustainable. So that's one thing that one challenge that we have seen and will continue to work with. But you know, it's not impossible. It just takes a lot of patience and a lot of understanding of how the system works. And a second challenge to that would be, you know, we think I talked about convincing young people to join us is actually not the hardest part of the work. Convincing their parents, however, is probably the hardest part of our convincing work, especially in Taiwan, where this is probably the most different aspect of our recruiting compared to the States. In the States, college graduates are very used to making their own decisions without having to listen 100% to their parents' opinion. That's very different in Taiwan. These parents have a lot of say in how their children make their decision, even when they're 22 adults, 22-year-old adults trying to make adult decision about their first job. Parents still have a lot of say. So that's something that we're trying to work with, you know, while we recruit for, in our minds, the best of the best young people to join us. Their parents tend to be the toughest of the toughest as well. So how do we convince them to agree with us that their children are not giving up 2 of their most precious years? They are indeed learning more and gaining more and becoming even better of a leader in 2 years' time. So that convincing work I foresee to be challenging, but as well not impossible. So
I see. Yeah, and I think a lot of our listeners probably can attest to, you know, having the parents be very either vocal or very opinionated about their career choices or, you know, other choices as well. But in terms of the education, sort of, you know, you said the education system in Taiwan. I mean, we know that the Teach for All or Teach for Taiwan mission is to primarily send young teachers to remote places that have the need. I was just wondering, do you see any other needs in Taiwan's education system, and how can TFT help to fulfill those needs?
Well, to talk about needs in the education system in any country, I think we can talk for days. But similar for Taiwan, and you know, to as something as a premise, we don't try to solve or even meet all of the needs or even majority of the needs in the education system. We can only focus on one real and very urgent need, which is the teachers' need. But there are many, many issues I'm going to talk about that are very real, but not part of our mission. But one of the things that perhaps we would help provide solution is giving students their right to be masters of their own learning. And that may sound very vague, but if you have been in any Taiwanese classrooms, you realize more than any classroom you see in the States, teachers are the masters in the classrooms. They teach and you learn, case closed. So you receive whatever a teacher has to teach you and receive whatever the textbook tells you. And really, you have no time or right to talk back, to ask questions, or to even think that a textbook is wrong. And that's a really one-way teaching that in our minds are twisting what learning should be at the core. And one organization that we're working side by side with in Taiwan, they are trying to solve this issue by introducing Khan Academy. I'm sure you've heard of it's
mm-hmm, yeah.
From the States as well, but they have an equivalent of that in Taiwan. They're not translating Khan Academy videos. They're producing videos locally in Taiwan. But the core of that is not those videos. It's by using those videos. And with his philosophy, you can check out Khan's TED Talk, and he talks about it as well. And with his videos, the most amazing part is that students become proactive themselves, and teachers become assistants in their learning. They supervise their learning, but they don't learn for them. And so that's a philosophy and a tool that we work with very closely, that we expect our teachers not to sort of stuff their students with whatever knowledge they think they should know. They should let their students learn for themselves, and they supervising the system along the way. And so the supervision work comes with using the right tools and using the right philosophies in teaching. So that's one thing that we're working to provide solutions to as well.
I mean, I think that's a lot of people definitely do feel that, you know, Taiwan's education system is very sort of top down, right? Very you learn, this is what we want you to learn, and you learn it, and we're going to have standardized tests to see if you learn this exact set of material exactly the way we wanted you to,
right?
And if you don't, you kind of get ostracized and sort of labeled as a not so bright student or sort of remedial student. And I remember reading something some time ago about a elementary school in Denmark,
right,
where kindergarten, where the students actually design their curriculum,
yeah,
at the beginning of every year. And I thought that sounds really cool to me, but do you see any chance of that, you know, actually happening in Taiwan? And if that's the direction that we think they should go, sort of what other changes do you see should happen in Taiwan for us to sort of have that kind of a model?
Right. Well, there are a few things that we can talk about in terms of how we eventually mm-hmm. want to see these changes becoming prevalent versus just special cases.
Mm-hmm.
And two things. I think the first thing being that first we have to prove what we're saying or what we're advocating is truly workable in Taiwan. So the reason why we're keeping the size very small is that we have to ensure every story is successful. We have to ensure that every teacher using this philosophy has our support to make it a successful story for other teachers who are not as early adopters as they are, but once they see their successful stories, they can follow suit. And not everybody is entrepreneur, and I think it's unrealistic to expect every teacher to have to change their teaching as soon as they hear about our philosophies. But if their success stories are concrete, and these teachers who are experienced in these philosophies that we're talking about can in turn help other teachers who are interested in changing, then I think this could work. This could spread amongst other classrooms. However, the other thing is referring to, I use the word generation very often, and I know it's a very sort of vague word, but it truly is very important, because what sort of the most distinct thing I think with young people, with the young generation, is that changing is not hard for us. Changing, however, is very hard for people who are, say, 20 years older than us, and that's just the way it is. So as the younger generation, our generation, is entering the teaching jobs, and as we are also entering other jobs that might affect the education system, we have to be thinking about changing very, very much. And so changing sort of in the classroom is very important, but changing the mentality of the young people who will have decision power, who will be the most important change makers, that's very important as well. So eventually, the hardest people to change, eventually they will retire, but the difference would be whether the people who will replace their positions, who are currently our generation, can have the changing mentality. So we work both sides, changing the future leaders and also changing the methodology and the stories that are happening in classrooms. So
I see. Yeah, I mean, I think the concept of the generation is actually quite important. I mean, throughout actually a lot of the other interviews that we've done, that topic seems to come up quite often.
Right.
So for the people in our generation, especially our listeners in Taiwan and also in the US, so how can they help with the projects and the upcoming events that Teach for Taiwan is planning?
Right. Well, there are a few ways to join us. The first, obviously, being joining our teaching corps, but that mm-hmm. unfortunately has some criteria, meaning that you would have to have Taiwanese citizenship to join us as a teaching member. And if you're a male, you will have to finish your military service before you join us. And that's unfortunate. We're trying to work with that. But at this stage, these are two realistic criteria that you have to have to even apply for us. But otherwise, we welcome you. And we actually want to urge as many people to apply to our program, which is open just as of this week. On the other side, if you unfortunately do not meet the aforementioned two criteria, and or if you're still in school, or if you're still sort of tied up with your job or whatever the reason, there are still ways for you to join us. The first being the most boring, but perhaps most important for us is you can help us raise money. So if you're interested in doing that individually, or if you're interested in even having like a small campaign in your company, in your school, you can definitely reach out to us and we can help you design with the material that you need and to be transparent as well as to how our financial status works right now. And that's the most boring part. Aside from that, you can also join us with your expertise. So our team right now has 20 people, and only 3 of them, including myself, are currently full-time. And full-time positions will increase, but it wouldn't increase that quickly. The rest, for example, this year we have, you can do the math, about 17 to 19 volunteers. And these are core volunteers that have done just amazing work. And they come from different backgrounds. They come from the design background. They come from teaching backgrounds. They come from, some of them come from management backgrounds, and some of them come from engineering backgrounds. And whatever their background, they join us. This sort of team joined us in October last year. And once they join us, we divide them into teams, and we are about to recruit for our next team for the new year. So you can just follow our fan page on Facebook or our website to see when we start recruiting for our next team. You can definitely feel welcome to join us and tell us what you're good at and what you're interested in doing. And the third way of joining us, and that unfortunately requires you to be physically in Taiwan, but we have events monthly in different places in Taiwan. And we've had, you know, 5 monthly events, and we call them Friends of Teacher Taiwan events. And essentially what happens at these events is that you get to meet the team, obviously, you get to ask questions. We also invite teachers that we think are phenomenal to share what they think are essential qualities as good teachers, what they think should be done in the education system. So essentially this is a mix of meeting the team, asking questions about Teach for Taiwan, but also hearing really inspirational sharings from teachers that work with us. So you can also, again, just follow our fan page or website to register for our monthly events to get a chance to get to know us a little better. So these are 3 main ways that you can work with us.
I see. I mean, I really wish we had a lot more time to discuss issues in education or even about entrepreneurship and starting up, you know, building a team and and all that. But unfortunately, we are running low on time.
That's fine. Sorry,
So,
very talkative of a person.
if you want to find out more about Teach for Taiwan, you can visit their website at www.teachfortaiwan.org. That's the word teach and then the number four and then the word Taiwan.org. So again, we have the founder of Teach for Taiwan, Anting Liu, here with us. So thank you so much again for taking time out of your Sunday morning to talk to us.
No, thank you. Appreciate it.
So this is again Chaiting Ye, your host, and you've been listening to the Katagalan Project. You can find this on Facebook or iTunes by searching for the Katagalan Project. That's Ketagalan. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time.
Thank you.